In this test, you're going to hear a number of recordings. As you listen, you will have to answer questions about what you hear. Before each recording, you will have some time to read the instructions and the questions. You will also have half a minute at the end of each recording to check your answers. In the IELTS exam, the recording is played once only. There are four main sections in the test. In the exam, you will be advised to write all your answers in the listening question booklet. At the end of the test, you will have 10 minutes to transfer your answers to an answer sheet. So that you can repeat the tests in this book, you should write your answers on a sheet of paper and practice transferring them to a copy of the answer sheet. Now look at the questions for Section 1. Section 1. You are going to listen to a telephone conversation between a student and an assistant in a bookshop. First, look at questions 1 to 5. As you listen, complete the numbered spaces in the account details in the book. You can see that the first piece of information has been completed. The part of the conversation relating to this example will now be played for you.
Krusty Bookshop, Bridge Street. Doris speaking, can I help you?
Is that the University Bookshop?
Yes, it is.
I'd like to place an order for some books, if I may.
Have you got an account with us?
No, not yet. I haven't started university yet. I'll be starting in October, but I'll be coming in early to have a look round and to get settled in and wanted to order some books.
You can see that the student is new to the university and does not have an account. So the answer is no. Now the test will begin. Remember, you will hear the recording only once, so answer the questions as you listen. Now listen to the first part of the conversation and answer questions 1 to 5.
Krusty Bookshop, Bridge Street. Doris speaking, can I help you?
Is that the University Bookshop?
Yes, it is.
I'd like to place an order for some books, if I may.
Have you got an account with us?
No, not yet. I haven't started university yet. I'll be starting in October, but I'll be coming in early to have a look round and to get settled in and wanted to order some books.
Right, I see. Would you like to open an account?
I don't know.
Well, you get a student discount on all book purchases.
Oh? How much is that, then?
15% for first-year students.
15%? That sounds all right.
You just have to make sure that you settle your account at the end of each month.
Okay. Well, I might as well open one then.
I just need to take down some details. Do you want the account to be at your term time address or your home address?
They're the same.
Right. First of all, can I have your name?
Nazreen Kerrigan.
Is that K-I...
No, I'll have to spell it for you. It's K, E for everyone, double R, I... G for go, A, and N for nobody.
A, N for nobody. Kerrigan.
Yes, that's it.
And your address?
It's 127A, Adelaide Mansion.
Hold on.
117A, no, 127A.
Okay, right.
And Adelaide, that's A, D, E for everyone. L, A, I, D, and E for everyone.
Yes, that's it. Then Mansions.
Mansions, right.
Compton Street.
Right.
London.
London.
And the postcode?
SE19, S, E19 7FT. 7 is 7F for Freddy and T for Tommy. F T. Right. So let me just check that. 127A, Adelaide Mansions, Compton Street, London, SE19 7FT.
That's correct.
And are you on the telephone?
Yes. It's 0181 797 4882.
797 4882 4882. Yes, that's it.
Before the shop assistant and the customer continue their telephone conversation, look at questions 6 to 10. As you listen to the next part of the conversation, for questions 6 to 8, put a tick in the appropriate space if the information is correct. If the information in the book is wrong, write down the correct information. You can see that there is an example in the book. For questions 9 and 10, there are four alternatives, A, B, C, and D. Decide which alternative is the most suitable answer and circle the appropriate letter.
Right. That's that out of the way. And which books would you like to order?
Well, I just want four books to start off with.
Mm-hmm.
Have you got Physics in the Age of Technology by Adriana Stern?
Physics in the Age of... It's out of stock, I'm afraid.
Oh, okay.
Would you like me to order it for you?
No. What about Mathematics and Physics by Professor I. Lovett? Experimental...
Just wait... Mathematics in Physics by Professor I. Lovett. Let's just check that. Right, here we are. Yes, we've got it in stock. It's £27.95.
£27.95? With a discount?
I'm afraid, yes. The next one?
Experimental Physics by Simon Blair and Violet Boyd.
Experimental Physics by Simon Blair and Violet Boyd. Okay, let's see. That's £29.50.
Okay. And Physics for the First Year Student by A. Lasker.
Physics for the First Year Student? That's £25.
Okay. I'll stick with these three for the moment.
Right. Would you like to have the books posted to you?
No, it's okay. I'll come in one day this week and pick them up.
Right. When you come in, can you bring two forms of identification?
Okay, like what?
A credit card, driving license, a check card, and...
Okay.
And your letter confirming admission to the university.
Yeah, okay. What time do you close?
We're open until 6 p.m. every day except Thursday, when we close at 7:30.
And you're on which floor?
The physics department is in the basement. The books will be kept here, and as you're paying by account, we'll post the bill to you.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye.
That is the end of section one. You now have half a minute to check your answers. Now turn to section two. Section two. You are going to hear a talk given by one of the student counsellors at a university. First look at questions 11 to 14. For these questions, there are four alternatives, A, B, C, and D. Decide which alternative is the most suitable answer about what you hear and circle the appropriate letter.
Good morning. My name is Dave Eastman, and I'm one of the five student counsellors in the university. And I'm here today to introduce myself to you briefly and to say just a few words about the Student Welfare Service. But before I begin, I'd like to thank your faculty head, Professor Anwar, for inviting me here to talk to you. At the end, I'll throw questions open to the floor. The service we offer is available on all 6 sites of the university campus. The 3 main sites have a counsellor available weekdays, Monday to Thursday, between 9:30 a.m. and 4 p.m. On this site, the office is situated in the Queen's Building on the first floor. I understand that all of you are based on this site, so I won't go into details about the others.
Before the talk continues, look at questions 15 to 20. As you listen to the next part of the talk, complete the notes made by one of the students present.
Information about the service and the other offices is contained in this leaflet, which you can pick up practically everywhere on campus. We also run a helpline, which is open after the office is closed. The number for the line is 0345 1607 2390. This number, with all the others, my own included, is contained in the leaflet. Obviously, we would like to make the helpline available 24 hours a day, but the money simply isn't there. So we have to rely on the generosity of volunteers. I can say, on average, the line is open about 3 hours per evening, most evenings, and roughly 8 hours at weekends. If there is no one to take your call, or in the event of an emergency, there will be a message on the answering machine which will give you other contact numbers. You might be thinking, why not just give us the leaflet and get on with the lecture? Well, the answer to that, as you probably well know, is that people don't always read leaflets. They look at them and say, that's not for me. People contact us for a variety of reasons. They may come to see us if they feel isolated, because it's the first time many have been away from home, or they may have personal relationship problems or money problems. Certain times of the year bring increased pressure to bear on students, the exam time being the main one, and I'm not just talking about finals. Preparing a paper for a tutorial or a seminar can also be a stressful exercise. On occasions like this, we are available to help you. We don't pretend that we have an answer for every problem, but we can try and help. And if we can't, we can usually refer you to someone who can. I would also like to take this opportunity to ask for volunteers for our advice helpline. You don't need any previous experience, and because you're newcomers to the university, it does not mean that you do not have anything to offer. We provide training and support for all volunteers, so if you'd like to get involved, see me at the end of this session. I'd like to thank you for listening, and now it's your chance to ask some questions. Yes, the gentleman in the third row in the red t-shirt.
That is the end of section 2. You now have half a minute to check your answers. Section 3. You're going to listen to a conversation between a student called Jim and a lecturer about an essay which the student Jim wrote. First look at questions 21 to 23. As you listen, answer the questions.
Come in. Hello, Dr. Towson. Ah, hello, Jim. Come and sit down. Now, it's about this essay of yours, am I right? Yes, the one on global employment.
Ah, yes. Global employment. Let's see. What was the exact title again?
Information tech...
Right, here it is. Information technology will put millions of people out of work throughout the world in the coming decades. Explore the arguments on both sides of this debate and give your opinion.
Yeah, that's it.
Yes. On the whole, I was very pleased with what you wrote. You've presented the different points of view clearly.
Thank you.
Did you give the sources for your statistics?
Yes, I...
Yes, I see. The World Bank and the OECD. Where did you get the figures from?
The internet.
Right, I see. Okay, well, let's have a closer look.
Okay.
Now, near the beginning, you draw a parallel between present-day fears about machines replacing people.
Yeah.
And the 19th century Luddites. It's an appropriate parallel, but don't you think it might be better to explain who the Luddites were?
Well, I did think about it, but...
Yeah?
I thought it might be a little bit simplistic.
Well, yes, maybe. But a short sentence might help, just to show the connection between then and now.
Before the conversation continues, look at questions 24 to 27. In his essay, Jim mentioned three reasons for people's fears and two reasons why people's fears are unjustified. For questions 24 to 27, there are two alternatives, A and B. Decide which alternative is the most suitable answer and circle the appropriate letter. In the book, you can see that there is an example.
Good. Let's move on then.
Right.
So... in the first paragraph, you describe three reasons for people's fears. IT is more pervasive in its impact than the effect of steam power or electricity, affecting service industries as well as traditional manufacturing. Second, IT is being introduced faster than earlier new technologies. And thirdly, that it makes it possible for jobs to be easily moved from one place to another. Could you have described any other reservations?
Well, I suppose I could have said that the richer industrial economies fear the easy transfer of their jobs to poorer and therefore cheaper economies, but I felt it was too restricted to fear. You could also blame the media for their coverage of large job losses at big firms without publicizing small business creation.
I see. Fair enough. So then you continue with two paragraphs saying why people need not be afraid. I see you start with the historic evidence that over the past 200 years of huge technological advance, employment and real incomes in rich industrial countries have risen fairly continuously.
Yes.
And you illustrate it by an OECD chart. Then you state that although jobs are destroyed by new technology, new ones are constantly being created which offset the losses. I liked your example here that as blacksmiths and coachmen disappeared, mechanics, drivers and car salesmen took their place.
Before the discussion continues, look at questions 28 to 30. Before the discussion continues, look at questions 28 to 30. For questions 28 to 30, there are four alternatives, A, B, C, and D. Decide which alternative is the most suitable answer and circle the appropriate letter.
Now, where were we?
Yes, you said that although new technology may reduce the amount of labour necessary to produce a given volume of output, this doesn't necessarily reduce overall unemployment.
Employment.
Because technology can boost output and create new demand and new products.
Yes.
Perhaps you could have given some examples here of products which didn't exist 20 years ago.
You mean things like VCRs, personal stereo, soft contact lenses? Yes, I suppose I should have done.
And of course, computers themselves, both personal and industrial. Good. So, let's have a look at your conclusion. So, you believe that on balance, given a favourable business climate and a well-educated, high-skilled workforce, there's no reason why IT should destroy jobs?
Yes.
You haven't explained what you mean by a favourable business climate.
I mean an environment where there aren't too many restrictions, rules and regulations like protectionism over goods, and restrictions on work practices, and perhaps minimum wage levels that are too high.
I see. Well, you've certainly thought through the issues, but they are complex, and perhaps you could have gone into them rather more deeply. However, as I said at the beginning, you're good and clear about your points, so I've marked it.
That is the end of section 3. You now have half a minute to check your answers. Section 4. You are going to hear a talk given by a university lecturer to a group of design students. First, look at questions 31 to 37. As you listen to the talk, complete the notes made by one of the students present.
Good afternoon, and welcome to everybody. My name is Dr. Paulette Southfield, and I specialize in European product design in the Department of Product and Furniture Design. It's fallen on me to kick off your first term with the introductory lecture. And after much thought, looking for a fancy title, I decided to call my talk today simply, What is Design For? What is design for is one of the most important questions that we seek to answer in this department. After all, an electric kettle is no more than a vessel with a heating element, a chair no more than a seat and back with enough legs for support, and a motor car no more than a box with seats, four wheels, and an engine. But we all know that a kettle can pour badly and be awkward to handle, a chair uncomfortable and ugly to look at, and a car unreliable and unattractive. The answer to my question is, of course, implicit in these examples. Good design makes for efficient products, like an efficient kettle, maybe cordless and manageable by arthritic or elderly hands. A well-designed chair is comfortable and an inviting asset to our living rooms. And a carefully designed car combines maximum safety, comfort, and elegance. The conclusion we can draw from this is that the role of design, to paraphrase Terence Conran, is to ensure that things do the job they were intended to do, that they are well made and efficient, and that they're pleasing to use and to look at. There are, however, other reasons for the importance of design. Advertising and the media fuel the acquisitive nature of consumerism, but together with greater choice, they encourage a more discerning approach from the public who can compare the qualities of one product with those of another. The aesthetic appeal of a bold new table lamp can be weighed against the charms of a dozen others, while the choice of a new personal stereo may involve its stylish appearance as much as its efficient function.
Before the speaker continues the talk, look at questions 38 to 41. For these questions, there are four alternatives, A, B, C, and D. Decide which alternative is the most suitable answer and circle the appropriate letter.
And yet there is another reason for the enhanced role of the designer in today's world of rapidly advancing technology. As the life cycle of every product grows ever shorter, the designer has to be working on an updated model as soon as the latest one is off the drawing board. Nowhere is this more evident than in the design of motor cars. The same technological advance has also made a huge impact in the field of medicine. And here the designer is involved in the development of new equipment, from the endoscope, the increasingly sophisticated dentist chair, and the robotic hospital porter, to the artificial hip replacement and other prostheses. Finally, we should not forget the role of design in the marketing wars. As manufacturers battle to enhance the desirability of their products over those of their competitors, the talents, imagination, and training of their designers are paramount. A proper appreciation of this factor can even be significant for national economies and their export markets. I'd like to end, though, with a few words on the relationship between good design and that elusive factor, quality of life. If we start by agreeing that living more than just existing, we must admit that living with everyday things that are aesthetically pleasing as well as effective enhances that quality. Most of us react against things which are coarse, feeble, or pretentious, but are drawn towards things which embody efficiency, imagination, and style. In the words of French designer Roger Talon, design is first and foremost an attitude. Now, if anyone would like to ask any questions or raise any further points.
That is the end of section 4. You now have half a minute to check your answers.